Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Madeline Eck.
This week, we'll hear the other side of Facebook and your happiness, the positive side.
If I'm reading something that you express, I'm going to capture something of this feeling.
Then we'll hear about some young people in California who hope to change the world.
It was seeing my friends hurt. It was seeing it on the television constantly. It kind of made me feel like I had to do something about it.
We'll meet the members of a special medical soccer team.
How does Hollywood help museums?
John Hamm stars in a new movie about baseball players from India.
And Catherine Cole will stop by with the music of Texas songwriters.
That's all coming up on this edition of Now. Welcome to the Monday edition of Now. If you listened to last Monday's show, you heard about a study that found that too much time on Facebook makes you sad.
But that's not the whole story. Other studies say that using social media can actually improve your happiness.
Madeline, now wait a minute. Is it Madeline or do you want me to call you Manny? Because I know you have a program, Manny and Maury at the Movies.
English at the Movies with Manny and Maury. You can never get that right.
Well, okay. So?
Let's go with Manny because, okay. You know, I think it's more common, I think, right?
Okay. Manny talked to an Italian researcher, Lorenzo Coviello, who found that using Facebook can actually contribute to happiness, not take away from it.
Emotional contagion can just happen through a text-based interaction. And so the idea is that if I'm reading something that you express, I'm going to capture something of this feeling. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, of course, the effect that you have on me is very, very small, but you have so many friends that the cumulative effect is very significant. So it's something big.
Now, there's a lot of studies out there that says that, you know, using Facebook makes us unhappier, you know, makes us more bitter and sad. How's your study different from those other studies?
So in our case, we have a specific question. Is that if a Facebook friend of yours expresses more happiness, what's going to happen to you? And if a Facebook friend is going to express less happiness, like sadness, what is going to happen to you? So we have this specific question. Mm-hmm. We look at the specific emotional state, and we see if this propagates through the network. For example, you are in Washington, D.C., you are experiencing rainfall.
Yes, it's raining cats and dogs for the last couple of days. I'm depressed.
So the idea is that on average, you are going to be a little bit less happy because it's rained. So you are going to express a little bit more negative emotion on Facebook. This is the average over all users.
Yeah.
And then part of this increased negative expression is also going to spill over, like, to me, that I'm in San Diego, assuming that we are Facebook friends.
Because I just posted a Bitstrip cartoon on my Facebook today saying that it's raining cats and dogs and that I wish I was home in bed.
Yes.
Now, let's say you and I are friends on Facebook and you get to see that on your newsfeed. Now, is this emotion that I'm feeling contagious to you being in San Diego?
So it might seem strange that that you're feeling some emotional state, you write something on Facebook that is related to that, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to feel a little bit the same.
But yes.
There is actually not as strange as it seems. Maybe even if you feel sad, you're still going to express more happiness because you care about your image, you care about how other people perceive you. But it's not a negative thing, because maybe you're not being 100% honest. But if you write more positive, it's going to boost the positive expression by your friend.
Manny, this guy seems to be saying that you pick up the energy from the posts. If people have a happy post, like one time last week, my wife, our little dog, caught a bunny in his mouth and killed
it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a downer.
You know?
That's a real downer.
She
posted that. Yeah, because she, you know, the dog like brought the bunny up and here you go, mommy. You know.
What did her friend say?
Well, I said, it's really sad. But the thing is, if she had posted a picture of our little dog nose to nose with the baby bunny, and, you know, they're both kind of like saying hi to one another, people would have gone, aw.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
you get all kinds of likes and people say how cute it is.
Right. Lorenzo is basically saying that happiness is like having a cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You catch it from other people?
You catch it from other people. It's viral. It's contagious. He calls it emotional contagion.
Huh.
Yeah. It's like you kind of get it by osmosis.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a room and everybody's happy and they're enjoying themselves and it's, you know, then you will feel more elevated, your mood will elevate?
Sure, you pretend to be more happy just to fit in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've noticed that sometimes you come into the office and people are like, I can't stand this, you know. And the first thing you find yourself doing is like, yeah, you're right, this place sucks, you know, or
right,
whatever.
Right.
You know, the negativity works that way. But apparently, according to Lorenzo, the positivity works that way too, and even over Facebook.
Absolutely, definitely over Facebook.
Hmm. Well, what about you? Do you think that being on Facebook makes you happy, or it makes you depressed, or does it not influence your mood at all?
What about you? How happy are you? Let us know by sending an email to voaasia@voanews.com.
And we are on Facebook, Happy or Sad, and you can let us know your thoughts and comments there. Our address is VOA Asia.
And we are on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow. Applause, applause, I live for the applause, applause, live for the applause, applause, live for the way that you cheer and scream for me, the applause, applause, applause.
Manny, do you remember your teenage years, what you wanted to do when you grew up?
Yes, very much so. I wanted to be a social worker. I wanted to go to Cambodia, worked with trafficked women and children, and make a difference. But that was not my path in life, it seems.
Really? Well, you know, for me, guitars and girls pretty much summed up my teenage years. I didn't really think about doing anything too serious.
Really? Well, you're doing something serious now. I mean, you're a serious journalist, and you are really good at what you do.
Well, thank you very, very much. The check's in the mail.
You're welcome.
But Elizabeth...
I'm expecting it.
Elizabeth Lee, however, caught up with some teenagers in California who are charting their own path to make a difference in our world.
15-year-old Winter Vanecki has accomplished more than most people have in a lifetime.
I recently completed a marathon on all 7 continents and became the youngest person in the world to do so. And I really was doing this for my dad.
Vanecki's father was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of prostate cancer when she was 9. He died 10 months later.
When he was first diagnosed, I immediately knew I had to do something to help him. That's when I formed Team Winter for prostate cancer research and awareness.
Through Team Winter and social media, Vanecki has raised close to $500,000. From Kenya to Mongolia, she has taken prostate cancer awareness worldwide through her 7 continent marathons.
So prostate cancer is much more common, but the men don't want to talk about it.
In the U.S., she travels constantly to give talks about prostate cancer and inspire others. At the recent Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles, Vanecki was one of several teenagers who addressed a panel about youth who are living extraordinary lives.
85% of all pancreatic cancers are diagnosed late.
Another panelist was Jack Andreka, who invented an inexpensive sensor for pancreatic, ovarian, and lung cancers when he was 15.
Without Google and Wikipedia, I would have never been able to learn all the stuff I needed for this project. I mean, I didn't even know what pancreas was before developing my test for pancreatic cancer.
He is currently filing patents for his latest inventions, inexpensive water quality devices that help detect and filter out heavy metals and pesticides.
I hope to see them employed in the developing nations such as Bangladesh and parts of China and India, especially as well as in parts of Africa, where these heavy metal and pesticide and other industrial effluents are a major problem.
16-year-old activist Mary Pat Hector saw a problem in her own community. She says too many youth die from gun violence.
It was seeing my friends hurt. It was seeing it on the television constantly. It kind of made me feel like I had to do something about it.
She became the national youth director of one of the largest civil rights organizations in the United States, the National Action Network. She also started a campaign which educates youth on the issue of gun violence.
My 8-year-old brother drives me. You know, I think about how innocent he is, and I just want the world to be a better place for him and my children.
Mary Pat Hector, Jack Andreka, and Winter Vanecki say a combination of supportive parents, the internet, and social media have helped them succeed. But what's most important comes from within, says Winter Vanecki and Jack Andreka.
I think the biggest thing for kids and adults is to never let age and gender be a barrier and to not just dream, but to dream big.
Never let anyone else tell you no. Always keep going for your dream and think, if a 15-year-old could do it, just think what you could do.
They say with that kind of thinking, anything is possible. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
So, do you want to change the world? Tell us how.
You can let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We might just read your comments on the air in a future show. One month from today, the world will focus on Brazil when the World Cup tournament kicks off in Sao Paulo.
Whether you back the Escret Carninho of Brazil, the Blue Samurai of Japan, or the Three Lions of Britain, soccer fans worldwide will be watching the matches.
But there's one soccer team which aims not to win the World Cup trophy, but to promote exercise and fitness.
Reporter June So and Amy Katz tell us about the U.S. medical soccer team.
On a recent weekend, 25 medical doctors came to Washington from across the country for soccer practice. The U.S. medical soccer team competes in the World Medical Football Championships, dubbed the Physicians World Cup, in a different country each year. The 2014 tournament will take place in Brazil in July, while the official World Cup tournament is underway.
Most of us play locally in our own leagues, but then we have to get together a few times every year to practice in preparation for the tournament. So it's a big time commitment. The tournament itself is 1 week long. That was part of why we had such a difficult time forming the organization.
Gautam Nayak is president of the U.S. medical soccer team. The Seattle cardiologist founded the group with a friend in 2010.
We had a soccer team in medical school, and we also were able to do some different community service projects during medical school revolving around soccer. And that really kind of gave us the motivation to form a soccer team, because we felt like we can bring together a lot of people with similar interests.
Co-founder Ki Tran is an internal medicine doctor in California.
One of my roles is not just treating disease, but also being a cheerleader for my patients to exercise and to eat right. And a lot of times, we need that cheerleader to encourage people to make those good choices.
A, apple, B, banana, C, carrots, D.
In addition to a weekend of intense soccer training, the doctors visited the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Washington, a charitable organization that provides after-school programs.
5 seconds.
We're seeing a tremendous increase in young people becoming obese at a very, very early age and developing illnesses that are generally seen in older patients. And we're trying to encourage young people to make better choices in their food and to get more active.
At the end of chicken bones.
They also encourage students to think about careers in medicine.
A lot of the populations that when we do our outreach program are at-risk youth. We could encourage these young people, maybe not become a physician, but also think of other possible professions in the medical field that they may never have been exposed before.
The U.S. medical soccer team will host next year's World Medical Football Championships in California. For producer June So, Amy Katz, VOA News.
If you would like to see video of the U.S. medical soccer team in action, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And leave your comments on our Facebook page, VOA Asia, and be sure to tell us who you'll be pulling for in the coming World Cup.
And we're on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
'Cause all we got is right now.
As you already know, I love museums, and for years, audiences have flocked to museums to see exhibits of film props and iconic pop culture artifacts.
Whether it's Dorothy's ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz or Ron Burgundy's suit from Anchorman, Hollywood artifacts are often a must-see for visitors.
As Faiza El-Mastry and Faith Lapidus tell us, some museums are taking cooperation a step further by creating exhibits around new movie releases to tell real-life stories.
The 2012 political thriller Argo, directed by Ben Affleck, won 4 Oscar awards last year. It is about a covert operation led by CIA agent Tony Mendez, who created a phony Canadian film crew eager to make a movie in Iran, where they rescued 6 U.S. diplomats hiding at the Canadian embassy in Tehran after the Iranian Revolution. Argo is also the subject of a recent exhibit at the International Spy Museum. Museum spokesman Jason Worden says visitors can see actual photos and documents about the operation.
Tony and Jonna Mendez both are founding members of the International Spy Museum and brought their expertise in their history of the CIA to tell this story of Argo from the real case that occurred in 1979-1980.
Other film-related exhibits at the Spy Museum include Exquisitely Evil, 50 Years of Bond Villains.
Highlighting all 23 Bond films over those 50 years and bridging the gap between what is really occurring in real life with what you see on screen.
The Americans is another exhibit based on a hit TV spy drama.
We have an exhibit in our lobby detailing not just the exciting characters in the show, but really the history of the Cold War that we're now seeing every day in the headlines.
The museum, a Washington, D.C. museum focusing on journalism, past, present, and future, has also turned to Hollywood. Anchorman: The Exhibit is its first effort to incorporate a movie into its offerings. The 2004 comedy takes place in a San Diego TV station in the 1970s, where actor Will Ferrell's character, Ron Burgundy, clashes with his new female counterpart. The exhibit opened last December, just before the release of the sequel, Anchorman 2. Museum spokesman Jonathan Thompson is amazed at how popular it's been.
When visitors come into the museum, all of them are asking, you know, where is the Anchorman exhibit? I've heard that you have an exhibit about Ron Burgundy here. Can you show me where that is?
Jim Mulvaney, who works at a radio station in Chicago, liked the exhibit.
I'm surprised they went to so much detail and kept so many props, you know. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's bringing back a lot of the funny moments from the film for me.
22-year-old Michaela Tonkin, an accounting major at the University of Colorado, also found it amusing.
The costume part looked interesting.
Thompson says the exhibits allow visitors to see the lighter side of the news while highlighting a serious issue, opportunities for women in news.
The film, you know, focuses on this fictional anchorman who's kind of a clown, you know, of the newsroom and is always kind of saying some not so nice things about the women in the newsroom. It was a story that resonated with us because there is some truth to the Anchorman films. Women in the newsroom were discriminated against, and in the past 30 to 40 years, women in the newsroom have come a long way. And that's one of the serious stories that we tell in this exhibit, in addition to, of course, the lighthearted, humorous moments.
American University film and arts professor Maggie Stogner says playing off popular films in museums benefits museums and Hollywood.
It gives Hollywood another opportunity to take the material that they create, often wonderful material, into new venues, to be experienced by new audiences that wouldn't necessarily experience it, to be able to see how audiences might experience the material in different ways. You know, if you have a screening experience in a movie theater, it's you and the screen. When you take it into a museum environment, you can really play with that material. You can use it or in group settings. You can use it to take people into the story behind the movie.
The partnership between Hollywood and museums, Stogner says, is just one example of how boundaries can be pushed, presenting new, exciting ways to engage audiences. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
There's a new film out this week from Disney that tells the story of two unlikely heroes, baseball players from India.
Million Dollar Arm tells the true story of sports agent J.B. Bernstein and his quest to find the next great baseball stars in India while making a reality TV show about it.
Guess what? We're out of money.
I mean, I don't know what else to do, J.B.
Hey, how fast are they pitching cricket? I think I cracked this.
It's called Million Dollar Arm. We find the first Major League Baseball player from India.
John Hamm of Mad Men fame plays Bernstein. Hamm told the Associated Press that he is really pleased with the way the movie came out.
It's great. I'm super proud of the movie, and I'm happy to be here. I'm in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard, and I'm not getting run over by cars, so that's kind of fun.
Blake Bell plays Brenda, who is renting a bungalow from Bernstein and ends up being romantically involved with him. Bell says the movie has a lot to offer to audiences.
But this is a very real depiction of a man who sort of finds himself on an unexpected emotional journey. And there are people who help him along the way. Spoiler alert, I'm one of them.
Life of Pi star Suraj Sharma and Slumdog Millionaire actor Madhur Mittal play the two prospects that Ham's character finds in India.
Sharma says the movie will connect to the universal emotions in the film.
What I really feel people will connect to, though, is the fact that it's a story about humans and a human connection and growth. And those things are beyond culture. You know, those things are beyond lifestyle. You know, they're very core to us.
Sharma plays Rinku Singh, who played for the Pittsburgh Pirates Major League team. He says that winning the $1 million arm competition in India transformed his life.
I mean, thank God that I made the decision to come into America, play professional baseball. And I feel really proud that what I have done. So is my mom and dad. They don't even know what a baseball is like. But being in America, the experience I got, I would never be the person I am today being in India, even if I get 50, 40 year old.
Mittal plays Dinesh Patel, who was also part of the Pirates organization. He says he believes the movie will inspire other young people in India.
Yes, it's going to really inspire people over there. You know, if we can do that, they can do that. We have set a great example for them.
Million Dollar Arm also stars veteran actor Alan Arkin and Bill Paxton.
Million Dollar Arm opens Friday in theaters across the United States.
Well, if I spell it out, if I get it out, will you hear me when I tell you about what I have to say before it gets too late? It's not easy as I said it'd be, but there's something right about you and me, something right about you and me.
That is the music of Bob Schneider. On Mondays, we try to bring you a little bit of musical taste. And joining us in the studio right now is VOA's own Catherine Cole. Catherine, thank you for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, Bob Schneider has teamed up with another what's called Texas songwriter. First of all, explain to our listeners, what's the difference between a Texas songwriter and anybody else?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that the state of Texas thinks of itself as being very different than all the rest of
it. Well, it started out as the Republic of Texas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that sets it apart. But, you know, I'm going to steer people towards my program, Roots and Branches, because Bob and Hayes discuss this. Bob Schneider and Hayes Carl, my other guest, discuss what makes Texas singer-songwriters different in the program this coming week. You know, Texas is a big state with a big sky. There are a lot of words floating around in that state.
Okay.
And these guys use all of them when they're writing their songs. They tell incredible stories. And it's just a different type of music. Texas has spawned some of our great songwriters over the years, and it continues to do so. And if you ask them what sets them apart from all the other ones, and it's a question I ask every time one comes in, they look at me as if I'm crazy. Because there really is no answer. Some say, oh, it's something in the water, or it's something in the air, or it's just that there's a lot of space for them to drive around and think about it a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, if you sit in West Texas, you can see a whole train. So
absolutely.
It gives you a lot of time for rumination. Now, you were mentioning before we started on air that these two gentlemen, Bob and Hayes, knew of one another, but they had never performed together as an act.
Right.
But now they're touring together.
Yeah, they did one brief tour of the United States, and they had so much fun that they're going to team up and do it again. Usually they're both touring constantly up and down both sides of the United States and across the middle with bands. But this time they teamed up and traveled together and played a series of dates across the United States. And they were going to be in Washington. And when I heard that, I said, I want them in the studio to come in to talk about what they do, because they do the same thing, but they do it very differently.
And you can hear the full interview that Catherine did with Bob and Hayes on our website, www.voanews.com. You can look for Roots and Branches also on many of these same VOA frequencies. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Now.
If you want to hear our show again or see videos of some of the stories you heard, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And remember, you can always email us at voaasia@voanews.com.
Or log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAsia.
Patrice Martin produces our show.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until Until next time, I'm Manny Eck.
And I'm David Byrd. Join us again tomorrow at the same time for another edition of Now.